Welcome to This Week in Heresy, Episode 1, Metafaith and the Vicar's Wife, with our in-studio guest, Sarah Thompson. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
And welcome to my podcast, although you kind of live here, so, you know, you didn't really have to go far or get on Skype or anything.
Well, the commute was cheap, what can I say?
Right. So, besides being my awesome wife, you are also a rocket scientist working at NASA, and you just recently became a blogger on the Patheos Pagan channel. What's that all about?
Well, technically I'm a columnist because I contribute to the Agora blog. So I'm not actually a blogger as such by their terminology. But I'm going to be contributing a column bi-weekly, largely focusing on queer and pagan issues.
Excellent. So so when is your first column due?
It's due on Thursday 19th, I believe, if Thursday is the 19th.
Oh, so yesterday. Excellent.
Yesterday?
This is going to come out on the 20th.
Oh, okay. Yes, by the power of the wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey sort of time-delayed sending things out on the internet technology.
That's right. That's right. So what else are you going to be writing for Patheos?
Well, really, the brief I have is to write on queer pagan issues. They've previously had one or two people that largely focused on pagan stuff, but they don't have, queer stuff, but they don't currently have anybody that is going to be writing regularly that specifically covers pagan queer issues. Quaganism, yes, I've just invented a new religion. Yes, Quaganism. Yes, that is my focus, Quaganism.
Right. So how are you going to approach this? Because, you know, some people really focus on, you know, this is a specific pagan issue, or are you going to focus it more on a general idea of these are issues that I happen to be talking about as a pagan, but are universal to any religion?
I'm kind of thinking probably yes to all of the above. You know, coming up with a hopefully interesting article once every 2 weeks doesn't sound like too much, but having to do it every 2 weeks will probably be quite hard from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I hope to contribute things that are worth reading, so I'm not really going to pull any punches.
Right. When you're talking about these issues, you know, will you be also criticizing particular pagans who have gender issues or queer issues?
I'm not a great believer in ad hominem attacks on people.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm talking about more like, you know, are you going to call out particular pagan groups for their own attitudes towards issues of queerness and gender?
Oh, you know, if somebody is being particularly egregious, sure, yeah. If the public really needs to hear that wrongs are being done, that's, you know, that's part of being a columnist, essentially, is, you know, I have a journalistic responsibility to report these things. I don't really see myself as a reporter because it's a little more opinion-based than that.
Well, yeah.
But some level of journalistic integrity, I think, is necessary.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a great column, and I think that I know you've read your first draft to me of your first post, and I thought it was really fantastic. So I hope that it really picks up and takes off.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Like anything, the internet is an attention economy. And, you know, if after a couple of years the only people reading it are my coven members, you and my mother, you know, I'd probably still keep writing it, you know what I'm like.
Yeah, that's true.
But you just never know how these things go. There's a great temptation to write outrageous things to get clicks, and I'm not there for that. I think there are plenty of issues that really need raising that don't need to be artificially aggrandized, let's say, and don't need to be pointlessly, I was going to say pointlessly pointed. That doesn't really make sense, but, you know, pointlessly offensive. I don't mean to be offensive, but, you know, that speaking truth to power thing, it's kind of important. It needs doing.
Right. And is that part of the reason why you actually accepted the column in the first place?
Oh, that's a good question. What went through my mind when I was first offered it? Actually, you should tell the history of how I ended up doing it, because it's sort of your fault, really.
That's true. So basically, I was approached by the people at Patheos to do a column about queer issues, and for me, you know, I could probably have done it. However, my focus mostly, especially after graduation, has been on interfaith work and, you know, getting my church off the ground, getting the interfaith work really going. So that's why I asked you, because I remember we were in the car and I said, hey, you know, I got this offer from Patheos and I don't know if I should really do it, but I think you would be great for it. And you were like, yeah. And basically,
I remember saying, yeah, I'll do that, and 10 seconds later thinking, oh, what have I done? What have I done now?
Right.
Let the death threats commence, you know.
Right. But I mean, I think it's true, because you know, you've wanted an outlet to talk about these issues, and you're just kind of, in some sense, I think, in the back of your head, waiting for something to come along, and it just kind of fell in your lap.
Yeah, this actually seeks into something that is kind of an interesting experience. There are probably not many people out there who've gone through seminary as a spouse of somebody going through seminary. And I just kind of had that experience, and it changes you probably as much as the person that actually goes through.
Absolutely.
And it sort of left me thinking, well, you know, kind of Gina's gone off and done all this stuff, and she's got this ordained thing, and she's got this MDiv and that sort of thing. And it's like, well, I'm kind of supposed to be a priest too. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for me? You know, I've been through a lot of the ringer with her when it comes to Pacific School of Religion. I mean, obviously, I didn't show up to classes, but I certainly got the backwash of it all.
Oh, certainly.
So, you know, what does it really mean for me? And I've been sort of casting around trying to work out that meant being queer and trans and pagan and not also Christian. That does mean that I have to figure out where I sit, because you know, some people listening to this may not realize that that Gina, well, talk about yourself. I mean, you know, your faith background, your faith path is not the same as mine.
Right. I mean, I'm Wiccan Christian, and I've started a church, and I've become a pastor, and I'm ordained both in our Wiccan tradition and in the Progressive Christian Alliance. And so, you know, I have the whole both and with the Christianity thing going on. Well, you don't.
That's true. It's not that I'm not a Christian hater. This is one thing that I think I've moved on about in the last few years. I was a Christian hater for sure.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I mean, I was done very badly too by Christianity, like a lot of queer people. Particularly trans people, you know, we tend to suffer really badly at the hands of Christianity on the whole. I was left with a really bad opinion of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the stories you told me about some of the people who profess to be Christians as you were growing up kind of makes my hair curl.
Well, yeah.
And I don't have much of it.
Yeah, that's different stories for a different day, perhaps. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not nice, not easy to deal with. And, you know, how do I, as somebody who has actually identified as pagan for a long time, really reconcile myself with finding ways to be friendly with Christianity? Because it's been made clear to me that Christianity isn't all evil.
Right.
Gosh, who knew?
Hey. So what is this concept of metafaith? I mean, it was one of the things that you came up with and wrote about during the whole seminary process. And I know for me, it was an amazing tool to really reconcile my Wiccan side and my Christian side, especially while I was going through my internship at Refuge. So City of Refuge, UCC in Oakland. So why don't you talk about what metafaith is, and then we'll talk a little more about how we've been using it as part of our ministries.
Well, metafaith is sort of a name that came up for a concept that was kicking around because, you know, I'd been talking to Gina and a number of Gina's seminary buddies, particularly Lee and Philip, who will be on this show as co-hosts, and you know, get to hear from them directly. And particularly Lee, we kind of got together and cooked up this concept, and metafaith was a name that sort of stuck for it. So metafaith really grows out of my other weirdness, other than being queer, other than being trans, other than being pagan. My other weirdness is I'm a little bit of a mathematician.
A little bit?
No, actually a little bit. I can't really claim to be a professional mathematician because I'm something other than that. Mathematics has been a big thing for me, and is part of my professional practice, and was part of my PhD and all those things. So, for me to really wrap my head around the world, because mathematics is part of the way I think, and that's inevitable if you really do it, my view of the world has to be, in some sense, mathematical, because if it's not, it's going to be inconsistent and my brain's going to explode. And, you know, turning your own brain into a pretzel by believing contradictory things doesn't really do anybody any good.
Right.
So, okay, the basic idea of metafaith is, well, you know, let's start from the concept of interfaith. I mean, everyone knows what we mean by, say, interfaith.
Well, generally, yeah.
One of the problems that I've seen when people attempt interfaith dialogue is they all do it through the focus of their own particular religion or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, atheists tend to approach interfaith from the point of view of having an opinion and listening to what other people say and reinterpreting that from their own viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Christians do this too. You know, Christians have this idea of interfaith, and a lot of Christians are very committed to interfaith.
Right.
And they do fairly well with similar religions, so they do quite well with talking to the other Abrahamic religions.
Right, usually, yeah.
Yeah. But when the religions get more different, you know, when they start talking to Hindus and they start talking to, you know, other polytheistic religions,
right,
and, you know, one of the many stripes of pagan that are out there. When they start doing that, they do it rather worse, and their attempts to actually recast things in terms that they understand themselves loses content. And
right.
They frequently miss the point. Similarly, you know, me as a pagan trying to understand Christianity as practiced by people who aren't evil, that was quite a bit of a brain pretzeling exercise to be able to understand, you know,
right,
well, how can these people do this and not be evil? It doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So what metafaith is if you take all of those worldviews and glom them all together and then create a sort of meta worldview from all of them,
mm-hmm,
you know, using normal brain power, this isn't really something you can do. Using mathematics, it is something you can do.
Right.
So that's what I set about to do. It's like, you know, I didn't really use mathematics in the sense of, you know, I didn't really write down equations.
Mm-hmm.
This is mathematics in a wider sense. But the idea is that, you know, if you take religions, and I mean religions plural, what are the things that characterize them?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's belief and knowledge.
Right.
So, you know, how do you categorize what a Christian believes relative to what a Muslim believes? You know, they have many, many core beliefs that are actually identical.
Mm-hmm.
They have many core beliefs that are different. So from a mathematical point of view, I'm used to this idea because, you know, mathematical models are all based around the idea of axioms. So what an axiom is an axiom is a fundamental element of believed truth.
Right.
So I might take a thing and another thing, and are they the same thing? Yes or no? That's an axiom. Mm-hmm. That's the most fundamental axiom there is.
Right.
One of the things that kind of got me in starting to do interfaith work was actually the impression that people really believe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, this is before I was involved in this stuff here, I had a co-worker, a guy called Richard. And Richard's a literalist Christian who believed in the young earth cosmology. Or at least he claimed to. I think he either believed it or he did it just to annoy me.
Oh, yeah,
and either is entirely plausible with Richard. I love Richard a bit, so don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It was clear to me, really for the first time in talking to him over an extended period of the months we worked together, that his ideas of religion were axiomatic. They were fundamental. They mm-hmm. weren't... They didn't have the character of something that somebody read in the newspaper. You know, you might read something in the newspaper about something that Obama said or something that somebody else said.
Right.
And you might believe that they said that. But, you know, if somebody posts a cell phone clip of what they actually really said on YouTube, you're going to change that view. It's not a very, these things are not hard.
No, it's mutable.
Yeah, these are mutable. Axioms aren't.
Right.
You know, this is like believing in gravity.
Yeah.
So we can build up models of religions based on the sets of axioms that people have. So what does this say about truth?
Mm.
So what, if I say, what do you mean by truth? What's true to you? How would you answer that?
Wow, that's...
Haha, I'm turning the tables on you. You thought you were interviewing me, didn't you?
Well, it's a complicated question because, I've been working with this metafaith model, so I'm used to saying, well, my truth is my own. My truth is what I fundamentally believe for myself.
This is an important, really, really important concept. You know, if I'm talking to a bunch of scientists, scientists have a very clear idea of what they mean by truth.
Right.
But really... This is often a misunderstanding that a lot of scientists have over their own philosophy of science. Not many scientists actually study the philosophy of science.
Which is perhaps a
surprising thing. Mathematicians can't really avoid it. You know, mm-hmm. for a mathematician, you can write any expression you like, has no meaning whatsoever without interpretation.
Mm.
And the interpretation mm-hmm. is constructed from the fundamental axioms.
Right.
So, you could have an expression that means completely different things depending on its interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is entirely consistent in mathematics.
Right.
Now, this is not something people usually do in English.
Well, absolutely not. Yeah. Because it's just too complicated.
Yeah. Well, people misunderstand what they're arguing about. So many of the sort of somebody is wrong on the internet arguments are actually arguments over the definition of a word, and the people don't realize that's what they're arguing over.
Well, I mean, that just explains the state of religion for the last 2,000 years. Because that's basically what the Reformation was.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on where you were, but, that's basically what it was. It's like, how do you interpret faith versus works? You know, how do you determine faith and works, and what does it mean by, what does salvation mean? I mean, there have been wars over the idea of what salvation is.
I don't know what salvation is.
Good question. I mean, I'm still working on that one.
Yeah, I mean, this whole idea that Jesus died for our sins and somehow made everything okay, I don't understand how that's supposed to work.
I'm still working on
that. But that's probably a different episode.
That's a very different episode, and probably with somebody like a bishop or somebody, to help explain that.
Maybe Philip will probably do a good job on that.
Oh, yes, Philip would do a great job on that. We should have him on soon.
Yep. So, right. So basically, this is I'm doing this to illustrate.
Yeah.
You can believe a whole bunch of stuff. You can believe anything you like, and that's your truth.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else can believe a completely different set of stuff. Who's right?
That's a very good question.
Ultimately, at some level, you're both right and you're both wrong.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of, you have to bite the bullet and actually accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true for scientists too.
Oh, absolutely.
There is a caveat though.
Yeah.
If you choose to disbelieve something that is scientifically provable,
mm-hmm.
you're in for a world of hurt.
Why?
Because every time you do something in the universe that exercises that property,
mm-hmm.
the universe will kick you in the ass.
That's true.
And those ass kicks will actually add up to a world of hurt. We're seeing it in the world over global warming.
Right.
You know, this is the classic bugbear right now for...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, there is an ideology, and it is an ideology, it's a set of axioms that finds it convenient to have people believe that global warming is some kind of weird conspiracy that scientists cooked up to take over the world.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, anybody who's actually done work in that area...
it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's obvious that it's happening. There is no conspiracy. You know, we are all in major doo-doo.
Well, I mean, even in the last 4 years, I mean, you've been doing field work in the Arctic.
Yes.
And your first year, you know, it was freezing cold and, you know, you had to be bundled up most of the time.
I saw the weather change year on year. I mean, my first year in the high Arctic, it was a desolate wasteland with hardly any plant life. My fourth year in the Arctic, and these were consecutive years.
Yeah.
Instead of going through desolate stones, really, and mm-hmm. ice to the site that we were doing the scientific work in, I was essentially riding through an Arctic meadow.
Yeah.
And this should not be the case. And the locals, the Inuit, were freaking out about this because, you know, they've been up there a long time. They've seen this happen from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And it is extremely disturbing for them. Also, you know, flying roughly the same route to the mm-hmm. island each year, and, you know, the first year flying over ice, the second year the ice being a little bit in the distance, the fourth year being you could just about see the ice in the distance if you really squinted.
Right, right.
And at 12,000 feet, that's quite a long way.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is you know, you can believe it or not, but it won't make it not happen.
Right.
This exactly. This is the point that I'm making. You know, the universe has some truths of its own, which we like to call science.
Mm-hmm.
And the universe will do those things. Mm-hmm. You can believe anything you like. The universe is just going to do its own thing.
Yeah. So, that in a nutshell.
Believe what you like. You can't push on a rope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just kind of trying to wrap up. In general, what metafaith is. And, you know, in some ways it reminds me a lot of a theologian that I studied in my theology class named Karl Rahner, and he's a Catholic theologian. And he had a similar, it was really fascinating because it was about the same time that you started really working on metafaith and writing it up. And he had a very similar thought process around belief specifically, because for him, faith isn't necessarily what it means to most people. Faith is this basic human need for something greater than themselves. So there's a need to be a human need for something outside of ourselves to believe in, to be part of. But belief for him was very mutable and was changeable. So, you know, you have this constant of faith where you're looking for something outside of yourself. And it doesn't necessarily mean like God or some specific deity or whatever. It could be science. It could be mm-hmm. nature. It could be something like that.
That's very similar to the concept of metafaith, where the actual axioms, it doesn't matter whether they're scientific or spiritual or belief in the tooth fairy, it actually doesn't matter.
Right.
The principles still apply.
Yeah, but I like his idea about the beliefs being mutable, though, because that's true. You know, your beliefs can change over time. There's certain axioms that you will have that you will always have. I mean, there are certain axioms I always have, especially around like love and compassion and what my faith is, that have always been consistent for me. But my beliefs about how that manifests and how that works in the world have changed over time.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I've been there and seen it in many cases.
Well, yeah. And I think sometimes people don't really understand just how mutable their beliefs can be. You know, because there's some people, you know, who have a very narrow mindset about what a particular religion or a particular faith path is, and yet don't realize that their beliefs have changed over time.
Yeah.
They may have some core things that they always believe, but some of the other beliefs have changed.
This brings on to one of the very interesting corollaries of this sort of thinking, which is that what happens when you start to believe things that are contradictory to each other?
Right.
And one of the problems with, for example, the Christian Bible is that it contains material that's contradictory.
Right. It's a badly edited wiki, as you have said before.
Yes. It's like the world's first wiki, and it was not very well edited at that. Can you imagine? I mean, people died over those edit wars. I mean, come on.
Right. A lot of need citation at the point of a sword.
No, definitely. I once ministered to somebody who was a devout Christian, mm-hmm. and he'd basically got himself into a real knot. I mean a real serious mental knot. He was turning his brain into a pretzel, literally. He was trying to believe everything in the Bible, and it just wasn't working.
Right.
All I really said to him is, does this seem right to you? And he admitted no. And I said, well, you know, you have to pick it apart. You have to, because of the way your brain works, you can't cope with believing contradictory things. So you have to choose. And sometimes you have to let certain beliefs go.
Mm-hmm.
Some may well be for some people more axiomatic than others.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to let them go.
Yeah. And, you know, and I came to that conclusion with my own Wiccan Christianity, because it was because of metafaith and the idea that, you know, my Wiccan side of things has certain has a specific set of axioms, and the Christian side of thing has a certain set of axioms, and they're both true to me at the same time. However, I came to realize that not all of the axioms overlapped.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I learned from metafaith is that that's okay. Mm-hmm. They can exist in the same space and time and not completely overlap.
Yes.
Because there are some things that, you know, I will do in a witchy context that I really don't want to do in a Christian context.
Well, of course.
You know, and vice versa.
The old British approach of do whatever you like, but don't scare the horses.
Or the neighbors, as our case may be.
Yeah, poor neighbors. I don't know what they think.
Yeah, well, that's all good. But I know it was a kind of a revelation in that sense, because it was like, oh, you know what? I don't have to force them to fit together perfectly. If that makes any sense.
You couldn't jam them together if you tried, so.
Right. Well, you know, some people try to jam Two-Face together or try to jam, in a way of trying to do interfaith, they're trying to jam all these traditions together, but not keeping the autonomy and integrity of particular religions.
That's right.
And I think it does the other religions a disservice to try and just focus on what we have in common.
Yes.
Because you need to acknowledge the differences. I mean, it's just like, you know, when we go to refugee, you need to acknowledge people's difference.
Yeah, you do. You know, we're both members of City of Refuge UCC.
Yep.
Why don't you describe City of Refuge? You'll do better than me.
City of Refuge was founded by a woman named Bishop Yvette Flunder, who's amazing. And if you ever have a chance to go 8400 Enterprise Way in Oakland.
And she's really probably, other than you, the one person that's responsible for changing my opinion of what Absolutely. Christianity can be.
Right. And she's just phenomenal. And it's based on a liberation theology. And actually, that's where the tagline of my website comes from. Free people, free people. And, you know, and she also talks about how secrets kill. And there's a whole thing about secrets, and we'll probably talk about that in another episode. Yeah. Anyway.
Don't get me started.
Oh, yeah,
that's
that's another whole long episode. Anyway, so City of Refuge, the way Bishop describes it, it's Methabapticostal, and it's very much a Pentecostal practice with lots of amazing gospel music and a lot of amazing people and very queer, trans, everybody friendly. And, you know, everybody is welcome at the table of God there.
It's predominantly black.
Predominantly African-American, yes.
Predominantly queer.
Yeah.
Large number of trans people.
Huge trans ministry.
Yeah.
Huge trans ministry. And actually the fellowship has a specific trans ministry called Trans Saints.
Yep. And they do good work with a capital G and a capital W.
Absolutely.
They're not kidding about it.
Absolutely. So, where are we going with? Oh, yes. So, you know, being there and being and learning metafaith and really kind of working with metafaith, it's been really interesting because now it's kind of ingrained in my brain, mm-hmm. this idea of metafaith. And, you know, when I try and explain, when I explain it to people, it's just kind of like light bulbs go off. Like, wow, you mean, you know, we don't have to twist our brains in knots to try and work with people? Oh my God. It's been kind of amazing to see when people think about it and they're like, wow. And what's really been interesting is that other friends of mine, like Lee and Philip and other people that I know, you know, have really embraced this idea of metafaith and really embraced the idea that, you know, we can work together and not have to, I guess, disavow any aspect of our faith and our path.
You know, I've cast a circle for the ordination of two Christian priests.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, we just had our wedding.
Yeah.
Our second wedding.
I should say we were originally handfasted, what, like 4 odd years ago?
Yeah. And we had a very specific pagan handfasting.
Yep.
And then for our legal wedding, which was about 3 weeks ago, we had a circle casting and a high church Anglican-ish wedding done by Philip.
With all the signing of the thing, and now we're actually legally married in the state of California.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I find it a wonderful thing that we can kind of float between those worlds. And that's kind of where Between the Worlds Church name came from, too. So, but I find it really satisfying and really fulfilling that we can float among these worlds and it's not a problem.
Yes.
And it really boggles my mind when people on both the pagan side of things and the Christian side of things, I mean, this isn't exclusive to one or the other, think that like that is the worst thing in the world. It boggles my mind that, you know, they can't see enough to, you know, let things happen and let stuff happen.
Putting it a different way, if you're a priest and you're telling people what they're allowed to believe and what they're not allowed to believe, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember a sermon from Bishop where she, you know, she was talking to a couple on a cruise and they came up to her and they're like, Bishop, you know, what do we do? Our son's a Wiccan. And she basically said, well, isn't it great that he found some way to have God in his life? And I was just like, booyah.
Yeah, so I was tempted to say he should chop wood and carry water.
We're about the end of our time, and it's about time to go. And so your article, it will be out yesterday.
We'll have been out 2 days in the future. Yeah,
on June 19th, your article will post on Patheos. So if you go to the patheos.com, and I think you have to look up the pagan channel.
I think that's right. Yes.
Yeah, and it's under the name of Queer of Swords.
That's correct.
And you can see her little bio that was written, and I took a picture of her, and she has a really nice picture on there now.
Oh, and buy all my albums on
Oh,
on
yes,
iTunes.
And if you go to mageofmachines.com, you can buy her albums. I particularly recommend The Descent, which is a journey to the underworld, The Descent of Inanna, and it's a really amazing album.
Come on, so far only my mother's actually bought a copy, so you
have
to help me out
here. Oh, no, more people have bought it than that. Although if you've been to PantheaCon a couple years ago, you would have seen the whole performance of it. But you have other albums up there, too.
Yep.
And Ritual Machinery, very excellent album.
There's another one on the way, which yep. is actually has a bit of a Christian flavor, which is weird
That's
for me because I'm not actually
Because you did the music for my Holy Saturday service.
That's right.
And so, So majormachines.com and then patheos.com on the pagan channel if you want to read her article. And thank you very much for being my first guest.
You're very, very welcome. I will accept this cup of coffee in payment.
Good. Well, I'm sure I can buy you other things later or something like that.
All right. And if you can hear the purring, this is Kobe the cat.
Yes, very cute.
He just jumped on my microphone.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's it for this week's episode of This Week in Heresy. I'd like to thank Sarah for being our in-studio guest. And if you want to find more episodes or find where our Facebook page is or follow us on Twitter, go to thisweekinheresy.com where you'll find all that information and the show notes for this show. As always, we thank you for listening and have a great week.